Thank you, Bob. This is John Williams. You've been good, I hope, Bob?
I've been great.
We're going to talk a little TV. You know, the Emmys are this weekend. Seems to me like normally when the Emmys come up, everybody's kind of ramped up about it. You know, will Mad Men win? Does Game of Thrones take the best drama? Stuff like that. But we've had so much surreal political drama that it seems to me like that's sort of, you know, overshone the Emmys and TV. But let's step back and talk a little TV in this first hour. We'll visit with, actually in the second hour, a TV critic, and we'll talk about some of the best shows of this season. And as we were kind of getting ready for that, we started to think about TV themes as well. So producer Griffin, by the way, here's a little trivia for you, Bob. Griff, I'll bet you don't know the answer to this. Maybe you will. Game of Thrones, you know, if it gets three, I think, Emmys in any category, it will be the most awarded TV show by the Emmys of all time. Who is number one? What show has the most Emmys of all?
60 Minutes?
No.
MASH?
No. Yeah, I don't know. You know, those are good guesses. Yeah. How are those not the winners? The winner is Frasier.
Frasier. That would not be my guess. I mean, Frasier wasn't bad.
Yeah.
It was pretty meat and
potatoes. It has longevity. Yeah. It had a good lead actor. It had good supporting. And, you know, there's a lot of Emmys to be picked up by supporting.
I do think Emmys voters get lazy if there's sort of a rating stalwart like that that's just there year after year. They're like, yeah, give it to him again. That's fine.
Well, what's the Bazinga comedy show?
The Big Bang Theory.
How did Big Bang Theory win for so many years?
And Jim Parsons won for lead actor so many years in a row.
God bless him. I'm happy. You know, I have no reason to hate, but I've just dialed through that show and I never caught on. And
it's hugely popular, but I have to agree with you on that one. I'm not really sure.
So what are we talking about themes here then, Griff? What have you got for us?
Well, here's the deal. I'm reading from the AV Club in a story they posted today or yesterday by Joe Blevins, and it says, on September 17th, 1966, 50 years ago today, a landmark TV program debuted over on CBS. And they contend that the theme song for this television program is like the coolest one that's been around for that long. And it just stays at the top when you're talking about what's a great theme. Now, I know you know, maybe, I don't know, this could be another trivia question.
I think I know,
question.
But I won't say.
No, go ahead, because we're not going to take calls on
Star Trek?
No.
Which is 50 years old this year, right?
Oh, no kidding, really. 1966, we're talking here. Griff, can you play it? Play for us what they say is the coolest, most enduring TV theme of all time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lalo Schifrin.
Nicely played there, Mr. Kessler. What are you, a musician?
It's in five, also.
And, you know, you can actually see the wick burning, right?
This is pretty awesome.
That is the right image, right? Well, it sure does match intrigue, energy. It works, doesn't it? It's fun to listen to. This song did chart. So there's that. But then it gets better, doesn't it, Griff? So maybe one of the ways to define a great TV theme is if other people play with it or off of it, right? So we have other versions of that song. And one of them positively cracks me up. When they redid the movie with Tom Cruise, which was really awesome, they had a kind of a bigger version of it. Can we play that a little bit? Okay, that's got a more modern feel.
I got to say, the song supports that kind of treatment, but I like the original Sly sort of, it builds a little bit more. I think that one's way more fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, we don't have time for winking and being sly. You know, when you're making a movie or TV show in America today, it's pow!
Yeah,
pow!
For sure.
Okay, so then this next one, I don't know much about this mashup you're going to play for us. Do you?
No, well, I was first reading this story online. It was the first I'd ever seen or heard of it. But Alan Copeland, famed music producer,
sure,
put this mashup together before mashups were as much of a thing. I think now I hear this and it seems like, yeah, well, of course someone did that because everybody's put every two songs together in some form or another. But this is before that was really going down so much. So
okay, so let's hear this. Keep going. Kind of works, huh? That's kind of fun. Okay, I'm digging that, as they used to say in the that. 60s. Did you like
it? I love that.
The piece says something to the effect of, they weren't really well-matched, two well-matched songs, but why not? You know, there's sort of
like
a why not quality to that.
It doesn't have words to the other one, so what the hell? Let's throw them together. Yeah, it does sort of seem obtuse, but it was, you know, you talk about mashups where you go, wow, you're doing that song and you're doing that song. Sometimes they could be the same song. One of the first great instances of that was on WGN Radio when Roy Leonard took You Don't Bring Me Flowers and mixed. Actually, they I don't know exactly how they did it, Bob, but I don't know if they were playing them simultaneously and segueing back and forth.
No, I think somebody used a razor blade and some stuff. Yeah,
cut the tape. And so it was Neil Diamond and Barbara Streisand, right? Took the two songs and mashed them up together, and it worked. It was a hit on its own that way.
Then they started doing it together on TV and stuff, yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah. I mean, it became a thing. You got any more for us along those lines, Griff?
One more that I guess puts the Mission Impossible theme together with a song from Space Jam. Let's just listen to this real quick. Oh, wait, no.
That's a Star Wars treatment.
Wait, no, you labeled
it. I just called it Space Jam. Just to throw you off.
This was actually on the album that Leonard Nimoy put out.
Oh, really?
And it was like Spock's music for outer space. And he just thought this had kind of an outer space feel. Pretty faithful cover there.
He went on to be part of the cast. Paris the Great.
Okay, so is that as good? Let's just crank through some of the ones I found and really like, Griff. Let's just go to, I think this is the Ventures, right? Hawaii 5-0. You know, everything's personal, isn't it? This would be my favorite. I lived in Hawaii at the time, so we would turn on the TV and watch the local scenes. Oh, my God, they're at the mall. It was very, very fun
for us. Is that what life was like for you on that show? A pretty faithful rendering?
We were running around the streets a lot in suits, being chased by men with guns. Yeah, that was kind of the Hawaii scene.
That cut you sent me, you nixed the... Like drum fill, the iconic.
I
was waiting for that.
I was in a hurry.
Okay.
Okay, so let's do this. So this is one you don't know, Griff, but if you just go down, okay, what were some of the really, you could tell that they put some thought into it, TV themes. Play the next one, Griff.
Which one is it? Jumbled up here.
Oh, okay, I'm thinking Bonanza. Play the one from Bonanza, because I just love this.
Sorry.
That almost sounds like Hawaii 5-0. So a lot of us are now playing back, that's, you know, the opening credits in our mind, and it really kind of works on that sort of gut level. It just transports you, some of those old songs.
How much of that do you think is related to the show itself? You know, when I put this, my personal list together in my head, I end up just listing my favorite shows.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that there. But, you know, does the music sort of speak to, like Mission Impossible, what the TV show's all about, that one works? I think that one does too in the case.
Here's
of
one that I think is really transcends the show, even though it was a great show. Yeah, we tease him a lot because we got him on the spot. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back.
We got to love that part, don't you?
He is a good harp player.
I was going to say.
And Sebastian.
Is that you, Bob?
No, it's John Sebastian.
Bob Kessler's our resident harmonicist. So then, you know, but if you do this, then you do got to play the one from Friends. Frankly, the show has been so, you know, overplayed. I don't remember this song as fondly as I probably did when it first came out, right?
I was going to say, do you gotta?
Okay, let's pass on that. So everybody play your best song. Yeah, that's all we need. That's all we need. Really, though, you know, that song charted, and that was the greatest TV show of all time, blah, blah, blah. So props to them for that.
It's a fun song.
Okay, then just for fun, let's just close this bit out with the theme from The Patty Duke Show.
Meet Kathy, who lived most everywhere, from Zanzibar to Berkeley Square. But Patty's only seen the sights a girl can see from Brooklyn Heights. What a crazy pair. But they're cousins, identical cousins all the way.
That song worked because there was soft parts and then there was jazzy parts because the two cousins had different personalities. You know, I sort of rediscovered that when Patty Duke died, and then we went back and sort of looked at her bio, and it was fascinating and tragic. And so then you listen to the old clips and you go, wow, that was a swinging song too. We'll talk the TV Emmy nominees in the 2 o'clock hour. Our Mincing Rascals about lost their mind this week. If you've been listening to the podcast on Fridays, you may already know, but we play back part of it on Saturdays, and we'll get to that after the 1:30 WGN Radio News. We had a conversation earlier this week with a business reporter from the USA Today, a guy named Nathan Bomey, who in Pittsburgh took a ride in a driverless Uber. In fact, he sat behind the wheel, but he didn't have to steer. The car automatically went through the real-time streets of Pittsburgh for him. What was that like, and where is the driverless industry growing? That's next on WGN. So they have driverless cars, and they have Uber. Did you know that now Uber is sending out driverless vehicles in Pittsburgh? I talked to a reporter named Nathan Bomey from the USA Today about that before today's show. Kind of scratching my head, because the point of Uber is you or I have a car, and we pick people up. So I said, why is Uber getting into the driverless business? And this is what he said.
Yeah, I think that what Uber is doing is looking several years down the road, realizing that eventually their business model could be threatened if one of their competitors is offering, you know, rides at a lower rate. So if in the future, say Lyft, for example, or some other competitor can offer rides in a ride hailing app service for less money because they have no driver, for example, then that's a competitive threat to them. So they're trying to get ahead of it. And they hired a lot of researchers from Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. That's why they have a technology center there. And they've really made a significant advancement here, because I think what's impressive about this is that they're actually picking up real passengers now in Pittsburgh. Not that many, but they actually have a real-life example here versus the other auto companies and tech companies are still in test mode.
So tell me about your experience.
Well, you know, we went through the streets of Pittsburgh, downtown, over the Three Sisters bridges on the Allegheny River, and really experienced the city. And that's what distinguishes this from many of the other auto companies that have deployed this type of technology so far, in the sense that they're doing this in an urban environment. Now, you see Tesla, for example, has automated steering and accelerating and braking on their Model S and Model X vehicles, but that's only on the highway or freeway. What Uber has done is in the city. And now city driving is considered much more difficult for computers and for software because of the chaotic nature of it, the pedestrians, the bicyclists. What's important to say is that this is not a vehicle without a steering wheel, for example. So you have to sit behind the wheel. You have to kind of keep your hands on the wheel at all times to make sure that if the self-driving car reaches the scenario where that it cannot handle, it will hand control of the vehicle over to you, the driver, and you are expected to maintain, you know, your attention at all times.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, you know, the Uber employees are the only people who will be allowed to drive these vehicles for now. But in the future, eventually, this could be opened up to the public, of course. That's, of course, the goal.
Well, it's kind of ironic, isn't it? And I know that this is just the first rollout. It'll change in time, but
what's the point of having a driverless car if there's an Uber employee sitting behind the wheel just in case? But I wonder if then in time, does somebody always have to be behind the wheel when they are, at least in theory, taking the driverless ride?
Well, there's a big debate in the auto industry about that very question right now. Because Google, for example, which has had a driverless car project for quite some time, has argued very vehemently that they believe the only answer is to go completely to a driverless car that has no steering wheel. They believe that the average driver cannot handle a situation in which they, you know, could go back and forth between self-driving mode and not self-driving mode, versus most of the auto companies believe incremental progress is necessary to get people comfortable with it, like you just said. Uber seems to have come down on the side of the auto companies here that it's important to get people gradually comfortable with it. So no matter what approach you take, though, we're certainly headed in the direction of self-driving cars taking over the road. The only question is this 10 years from now or 50 years from now? That's really where they're
at. And 10 or 50 years from now, they're going to play back this interview and laugh at the naivete or the ill-ease I have with this. They're going to say, oh, God, look at that guy. Now they don't even have steering wheels. It's just a pod. And think about that. If a pod showed up with seats, they could be in a circular fashion, and you just get in there and hit the button, and that pod with wheels takes you where you're going.
Well, it's funny because Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla Motors, which of course has its own technology they're developing, famously said a while back that he could envision a day when driving is illegal because it'll be so dangerous compared to, you know,
allowing. Right, but what if a bicyclist, what if a pedestrian, what if something that doesn't have as big a footprint for the vehicle to see, what if they get in the way, a dog?
Yeah, and ultimately it was interesting. In the car yesterday, called 2 days ago with Uber, we navigated around bicyclists very well. We handled pedestrians very well, not a problem. But then we got up to the one intersection, for example, and the car to our left, the guy was trying to wave us on with his hands. Well, the self-driving Uber cannot see that, and so the Uber just stayed still waiting for him to go because it was his turn. So they're still working on those natural human language scenarios, and that's a big challenge. There are still many scenarios it cannot handle. For example, when someone's parallel parking in front of you, our cars just stopped in the middle of the road. Most humans would try to navigate around that. So there are many things that it still needs to work on.
Boy, you get that a lot these days. People will sometimes say at a stop sign, it's their turn to go forward, but they take that opportunity to check their email or text messages and they'll wave you on. Or you're right, maybe there's kids at an intersection and they're waving you forward or back. And even though it's your turn, you might choose not to go because of the hand signals from pedestrians.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, the self-driving car, it turns out, follows the rules. Mm-hmm. Unlike you and me on the road, they never go over the speed limit, and they stay right between the lines. But that sounds good, but ultimately that can be a bit of an issue as well, because humans know that sometimes you have to cross the yellow line a little bit to be safe, and that's going to take some time to program into the algorithms.
Yeah, he's got a point there. Nathan Bomey writing in Tuesday's edition of the USA Today. This is John Williams. Our Rascals Were Mincing, the podcast rebroadcast after the news. And the news is next on WGN. Okay, thank you, Bob Kessler. This is John Williams. Every Friday we drop a podcast at, wherever you check your podcasts out, that's where you can get it. It's also posted every Friday on my Facebook page. I'm King John, and also you can listen to it at WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals is the podcast. It's a roundtable. We talk about a variety of issues, and then we like to just broadcast part of that here on Saturdays on WGN. So the podcast this week begins this way.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
And I'm Krista McQuarrie, the dazzling member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
Here we go.
Wait for it.
I'm Eric Zorn, the plucky columnist of the Tribune.
Plucky. Plucky.
Now we have to use those words again somewhere else in the podcast. So.
Yeah, they do need to pop up organically, as it were.
All right.
I am happy to report that all of us do have letters today from our doctors saying that we are in excellent health, and if elected, we will be the healthiest Mincing Rascals ever. My view is that Donald Trump so little regards the truth or American people that he even lied about his weight on Dr. Oz. He may be 6'3", kids, but that's more than 236 pounds we're looking at. It doesn't matter, of course, but the process does, it seems, this year. We don't talk about issues. We talk about how they talk about things. So, Eric, what did you make of the big Dr. Oz Donald Trump reveal?
I never had a lot of doubt about Donald Trump's basic health as a 70-year-old man. He seems fairly robust as far as that goes.
I'm not obsessed with it. I think it's important to, you know, reveal some, you know, some sort of doctor report to show that you're not going to, you know, pass away. And it was known before the election. But, I mean, we have to acknowledge that Hillary Clinton fainted. And it was caught by somebody on cell phone. So that ramped up all the discussion this week. And then it did become pretty relevant, I think.
She is Wile E. Coyote, and Donald Trump is the Roadrunner. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. You know, every time it looks as if he's being cornered into telling a little more truthiness, he gets away with it. 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, I would have told you that a Donald Trump presidency was unimaginable. I'm starting to imagine it because I think there's not a single rule applies to him, and he knows how to work it, and it's paying off.
An excellent example of this happened earlier this week, the middle of this week, when he went to Flint, Michigan. He went to an African-American church there, and he stood up and he was talking about the water crisis, and then he started eliding into a campaign speech. And the pastor kind of got up and came said, you know, Mr. Trump, please, we want to keep the focus on Flint. And he said, very respectfully. He said, okay, fine, thank you. And then he finished up pretty quickly and went away. And the audience at the church, you know, you see the video and hear the audio of this. The audience was heckling him, was not on his side. So the next day he goes on Fox and Friends, and he tells a story that is completely at odds with what you see on that video. It is as brazen a misrepresentation of what happened as Hillary Clinton saying she came under fire landing in a Bosnian airport.
Which she's still paying for.
Trump does this so reflexively, so
what did
impulsively.
He say? I didn't see
He said that the woman was really nervous.
And that she had
a political agenda.
And the audience was on his side and was chanting to let him speak. All these things were just false.
This minister equally respectfully shot down a member of the crowd when he started ridiculing Donald Trump.
If you haven't been to a black church lately, there is a lot of politicking that goes on.
No, but
in
he
black
agreed
churches.
To
Absolutely.
Give a speech.
It
he
is
agreed
totally
to give a speech.
It doesn't. It is an accepted. You, if you are a
matter.
White politician in Chicago, you want
it
to get in
matter.
Front of black churches.
It doesn't
and talk
matter.
To them.
If he had complained about that, that's fine. He told a different story than the story that happened. If he wanted to tell the true story of what happened there and complain that he's being held to a different standard, that's a different issue.
And you're that confident that you saw beginning to end
absolutely.
The entire.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't deny, Kristen, that this guy lies reflexively and constantly. He's lying this
they
morning.
They both do.
This
they
morning,
both do.
He lies
they both
way
do.
More
no,
than
they
she
No,
does
they
do.
Don't. We have to stop that. We have got to stop this.
This false equivalence, I think, is really.
Let me tell you something.
It's irresponsible. It's at an irresponsible
this
level.
This speaks to the boring level of my life. I can remember 25 years ago watching C-SPAN and watching Alan Simpson, you know, the great American curmudgeon, the former Republican senator from Wyoming, giving a speech to the young Republicans in the 90s, and I still remember it. And he said something about the media. He said, you know, you people have got to watch the media because the media, in an effort to what they think is fairness, there can be a vote in the U.S. Senate that's 99-1, and the media, in the name of fairness, will give the one voter the same attention as the 99, that there's no perspective. And that's where we are right now with this. I mean, Donald Trump saying today that Hillary Clinton started the birther movement and he ended it. It was interesting, right after he gave that speech, both the New York Times and Washington Post in their characterization said Donald Trump falsely claimed, which I think is turning a corner
I mean,
a little bit.
There's no evidence.
Giving it an equivalency that is mind-boggling, mind-numbing.
PolitiFact traced back the origins of the birther movement. It did not come from Hillary Clinton. It didn't come from her campaign, but it came from her supporters.
He said it came from Hillary Clinton.
He did, and
it's
he's wrong about that. But lots of people over the years have made that leap.
Do you think there's an equality in the level of lying in this campaign? I mean, Hillary Clinton certainly has issues with her truthiness as well. Absolutely. Do you think they're equal?
I think if she spoke like a normal person and did press conferences, that yes, there would probably be more like, you know, press coverage of her statements regarding A, B, and C. But she doesn't talk to the press.
Well,
she doesn't speak publicly. She never goes off script.
He lies in speeches. Do you think that the level of untruth is equal between the two of them?
I mean, I don't, I'm not going to answer that question, Steve, because if we're going to sit here and, okay, so he lied about the way that, or he misrepresented this appearance that he had in front of a black church. I mean, why do we care? Why do we get so upset about him lying about his
because
weight?
Because he said he was going to release his medical records. Tax records. He lies every day.
The tax return thing, I'm totally with you.
And the Republicans have been obsessing about her lie about landing in the Bosnia airport for however many years
it's been. Another Benghazi
hearing.
To
me, the fact this guy, I mean, he's lying about the Hillary Clinton things. She did not start the birther movement. She never said anything to advance that movement, and it basically died. He led the birther movement. He was the birther in chief.
Listen, the birther movement is ridiculous. It came from what I would describe as the really radical right wing of the Republican Party, the Tea Party people. They were wrong, and they were wrong to keep fanning it. But Donald Trump was not around. I mean, he was nowhere on the scene in 2008, 9, 10, when it was being perpetuated.
It was his pressure that forced the birth certificate to eventually be revealed. He says he ended it today, and he says, you all know what I mean, and that was by forcing the birth certificate to be revealed.
The birth certificate came out in 2011, and he's still been picking at that scab for the last
13. I just want us to be accurate, and I do think that the media has a tendency to jump on something he says, and then if you actually go back and watch the whole reel, they do take things out of context. And what I don't like is when the media attacks him for something, but they look the other way when it comes to the left.
And see, I just don't see that happening. She's the one who's released medical records far in excess of his. She's the one who's released tax returns.
Yes.
And she's the one who's called not transparent.
Who are you mad at, Steve? Are you mad at Hillary? Are you mad at the media?
John, I'm mad at Donald.
Are you mad at the American people? Because they're the one. This is not that difficult to discern what you're saying, but people don't seem to care.
That's my point.
I am mad at everyone who is drawing a breath. No, it goes back to, I mean it. It's like Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner.
Well, I feel bad for Kristen McQuarrie today because PolitiFact regularly, if you look it up, they say 70% of the things that Donald Trump says are pants on fire, not true, or generally not true. And Hillary Clinton is more than 50% of the time telling the absolute truth. I regret, Kristen, that you're being put in a box to defend Donald Trump, who I don't think you support, but you so dislike Hillary Clinton that that's the position you find yourself in.
You know,
you can't win.
I don't really dislike Hillary Clinton. I am just hypersensitive to when the media goes after him in a way that they don't her. I'm not defending Donald Trump on the birther issue. I'm simply repeating what I read, that PolitiFact, where it actually came from.
Isn't the worst of it, though, that he rides the wave of mistrust or hate? He has always been in a position to put it down, but he either rides it or furthers it.
I agree with what you're saying, but we haven't even talked about Hillary calling half of his supporters deplorables the other day.
Let's go back, homophobes,
everything else.
She was an LGBT fundraiser. Barbara Streisand was there, and she said, you know, that half of Donald Trump's supporters are what I call belong in the basket of deplorables, homophobes, xenophobes, Islamophobes.
Yeah, I think that's all the phobes.
All the
And the other half of them have lost hope. They're angry at everybody.
Speaking of a longer quote, had you kept it longer, she was a sympathetic or understanding of the other half.
That half never gets played.
Well, because the first half was a big mistake.
If context matters at all, the media didn't do her any favors by chopping that quote in half.
Okay. First of all, you look at the polls.
You slammed his coffee cup down.
If you look at the polls, you look at when they poll Trump supporters, you'll find that this notion that half of them are either racist or Islamophobic or xenophobic or all the various phobics, that's basically true. He does give great comfort and support to people. You know, people who are deplorable by that definition.
He has raised them up.
But what are those, Eric? I mean, 69% of people who say they're going to vote for Trump do not believe Barack Obama was born in the United States. And a high percentage of them believe that he's Islamic. And a high percentage of them think that blacks are lazier.
31% of South Carolina voters who supported him thought that homosexuals should be banned from entering the country.
Right. So is Hillary wrong when she says that's a basket of deplorables?
See, I don't think, first of all, no, I don't think she's wrong. to say that. I don't even think politically it was that big a mistake. I know that. I know that puts me in the minority, but it put that issue front and center, and that's where the Hillary Clinton campaign wanted it. They wanted it away from the Clinton Foundation story.
Oh, you think this helps or hurts her more, Eric?
I think it helps her. I don't. How about you guys? Name somebody out there who's going to vote. Who's going to vote for her? Who's going to say, well, I was going to vote for her, but
the national polls shifted on that line.
I think her wobbling and I did a column on this on Wednesday, and I thought that defending the deplorables remark, but pointing out that she then had that momentum and it all went away when she wobbled and was.
Well, what do you mean wobbled?
She had pneumonia. She was diagnosed with pneumonia on Friday.
Yes,
I am.
That cost her more than the line.
I think
about,
it did because it was.
Shame on us.
Well, no, she needs to be more candid, more transparent about this. If she's got a health problem, she's got to just come out and say, "Hey, look, I've been diagnosed with pneumonia. I'm going to take a couple days off the trail." There's something congenital in Hillary Clinton that she just can't be transparent. She's got this penchant for secrecy, and it has served her so poorly.
Her speech in North Carolina. Lina, when she came back to the trail, said, when it comes to public policy, I'm much better at the policy than I am at the public.
I'm still surprised that in this day and age of HIPAA, that we think that we have a right to know the details of somebody's personal
health. Here's the thing, John.
That's secrecy?
Can we get back to the deplorables comment for a minute?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to pull up a recent Reuters Ipsos poll. This is not a partisan organization. That basically said that it paints a depressing picture of the United States electorate's opinions on race. The main takeaways are, yes, more of the people who identified with Donald Trump had racist views, but Hillary Clinton supporters are definitely there, too.
Yeah.
And if you go through the list, it is like, 33% of Trump supporters think that blacks are less intelligent. 22% of those who identified with Hillary said the same thing.
But, said Steve Bertrand, something else, that's part of the, that was just the first 12 minutes. You'll have to continue to listen to the podcast. Again, you can hear it online at WGNplus.com or subscribe to the Mincing Rascals wherever you listen to finer podcasts. Mincing Rascals. Thank you, Kristen McQuarrie, Eric Zorn, Steve Bertrand. This is John Williams. You may want to jump in on the phone. My number is 312-981-7200. I'm not sure I want to answer the phone, but the number here is 312-981-7200. This is WGN. John Williams on WGN Radio. Boy, I'm looking at the list of the TV shows in the drama category for the Emmys. We're going to talk about this after 2 o'clock. It's funny because one of these is going to win and the rest of them are not going to. You can just imagine the producers or stars of these shows going, what does it take? Let's pick up a phone line. I think Brian is there. Hey, Brian, this is John and you're on the air. What's up?
Hey, John. Good to talk to you. I called your producer and I asked if you had not seen the video by the...
Hey, Brian, hold on one second. I need to talk to my producer and engineer. Hey, Krista, hey, Griff, you know what? I'm hearing you guys and not our caller, and I know the audience is, so I want to hear what Brian has to say, too. So click out the two of you, and then you guys know the buttons to push to make sure that I can hear our caller Brian in my ears. By the way, that full podcast you can hear at WGNplus.com. You can also subscribe to the Mincing Rascals. That's the name of the podcast. We drop it every Friday. Brian, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you sound great. What's on your mind?
Oh, good. I was just wondering if you had seen the video when you described what Hillary collapsed in front of the car there as a wobble. I was wondering if you had actually seen the video, because I can't imagine you describing it as a wobble if you'd seen that.
You know, I sure did. And when they said wobble, I thought they meant, like, rhetorically, like her campaign is wobbling here.
Right, but, yeah. That's what I thought at first, and then you guys kind of went along with it. You know, here's what I think about her health and why, and you had questioned that it was kind of shame on us for worrying about it. I think it's because it's a lot more serious than just pneumonia. I mean, we know she fell and broke her arm. We know she fell and hit her head and ended up with a blood clot in her head. I think she's having seizures, and this is why I think that it's common for her to do it, because when she fell like that in front of the limousine, which was scary to watch, they didn't rush her to a hospital. They didn't rush her, you know, to the emergency room, which you would think when you see someone collapse like that. They took her to Chelsea's apartment. It seems like it's almost routine that she has these, I don't know, I hate to use the word seizure if that's not accurate, but these episodes, I think she has them on a pretty regular basis for them to be so calm about her collapsing like that. I think if Donald Trump collapsed like that or pick any other candidate, Nancy Pelosi or anybody else that it had never happened to before, if they collapse like that in front of a limousine, I think it'd be rushing them to the hospital immediately. But it seems like it's almost common for her to do that.
That's the only video I've seen a couple of other videos of her getting up or off of a step or something like that, and she sort of loses her balance. You know, when I saw that video, I just wasn't that alarmed. And here's the bigger issue for me, Brian, and you can answer this.
Sure.
Do you think that we all do have a right to, it's as imperative that they reveal their health records as, say, their tax records?
You know, I don't think it's imperative if they have high cholesterol or if they have something like that. But if there's a real serious condition that could affect their mental ability, then I think it is important. And yeah, I've seen her trip and when she tripped on the plane and stuff like that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking when she fell in her home, she broke her arm. And then another time she fell and she hit her head on something in her home. And, you know, she had the blood clots. But she's admitted to that she is on blood thinners because she had the clot in her brain. I think that if something is more severe like that, that can affect her mental ability. I mean, what if she was doing a press conference with a foreign dignitary and she just collapses on stage with him, or if she's trying, she has that moment where, you know, she can't remember what's going on.
Well, I just think that, but that's the risk you take with any senior citizen that you elect to office. I know 70-year-olds, and that's their life now. It may happen, it may not. But in general, my personal assessment, and this really isn't an affection for Hillary Clinton. I wish she wasn't running. But I'm willing to throw in health-wise. If you just said, do you think she'll be healthy enough to serve 4 years? Well, yeah, I think so. I may be wrong, but you or I might fall tomorrow, too. So,
I mean, that can have anybody. And, of course, the older you get, the more likely you're going to have these kind of conditions. But if you just look, I mean, all politics aside, to me, Hillary and Trump, it's like, would I rather be stabbed or rather be shot? I mean, but taking politics out of it, I mean, Trump is all over the map doing all these outing stuff, and he's older than she is, and he just looks to be in a little more better physical condition than her. But if it's
true. If it were just a physical contest. Okay, Brian, thanks for the phone call. If it were just a physical contest, yeah, I'd say I'll bet Donald Trump, right? Women tend to live longer than men, but Trump seems to be pretty healthy for his age. He's never had so much as a glass of beer. He doesn't smoke. Whatever that was on Dr. Oz, there was no bad news. So, yeah, I could go with that, but I'm going to go with more than that, too. Brian, I appreciate your call. We're going to pause here. We'll update you on the news. Then we go to the Emmys. What an interesting year. That's coming up on WGN. Thank you, Bob Kessler. John Williams here. Happy Saturday to you. Northwestern football later this evening, 6:30, the pregame coverage, 7 o'clock kickoff tonight, Northwestern Wildcat football with Dave Bennett and Ted Albrecht. So I get to do a whole show, and that gives us this hour to do some of our regular segments, the Vibe Score and Pop and the Beat segment. We'll do that a little after 2:30. And in this half hour, we talk to Kelly Freese. She is a writer for Channel Guide and TV Weekly. The Emmys are tomorrow night, so let's talk about the season that was on TV. Hi, Kelly. This is John. You're on WGN. How are you?
I'm great, John. Thanks so much for having me on today.
What popped for you on TV this year? What was surprising or especially good?
Well, you know, the thing is, TV this year, there was so much that was good. I kind of am very, very glad that the Television Academy did a lot of the hard work and culled through all the great stuff for us and you know, gave us some great nominees in a lot of big categories. You know, if I'm going to talk about a show that everyone was buzzing about that's new, we've got to talk about Mr. Robot on USA Network. That's
talk
a show
about that,
that in its freshman season, it's a show that just really captured the imagination of a lot of people. You know, who doesn't love the idea of a secret clandestine hacker network trying to bring down big industry that's doing bad stuff? It's good.
Yeah, it is. Although I watched that show, and I think Rami Malek is the actor.
Yes, Rami Malek.
Boy, is he good! He's so talented. That whole cast is really good, and I don't know most of their names, but I don't even know if I exactly understand what's happening on the show. A hacker network has sort of brought down the equivalent of Microsoft or Google or the banks. Now we don't have the same sort of commerce that we do. It's kind of this renegade world, right? Something like that?
Yeah, and I almost don't even mind that there are parts of it that are going completely over my head.
Yeah,
it's kind of
right.
like Lost, where you kind of have to suspend disbelief and just kind of ride it. And
yeah.
eventually, hopefully, it'll all make sense. And hopefully, as the show goes on, it'll continue to be such a, you know, it's like a buzzy, edgy, fun show. And, you know, there's so much TV on right now that regardless of, you know, whoever you are, there is a TV show that is pretty much tailor-made for you.
Well, let's just visit with the drama series then, since you started there. Mr. Robot, I said earlier that what a shame for all these other shows, because only one of them is going to win. And so the producers of Downton Abbey, Game of Thrones, Homeland, House of Cards, Mr. Robot, The Americans, Better Call Saul, all nominees, none of them are going to win except one, you know. And
yeah.
they must be slapping themselves going, what does it take to win an Emmy around here?
Well, you know, I think back in the day when there were only three major networks, an Emmy, you know, maybe meant a lot more. A lot of these shows are so successful in their own right that really an Emmy is just another feather in the cap. I mean, and thinking about all the great shows that are nominated for Best Drama, I mean, I know that a lot of people are thinking it's going to be Game of Thrones, and that show is wonderful. HBO puts millions and millions of dollars into producing each episode. But I am of the, I guess I root for the dark horse. I like to recognize someone who's challenging the way we watch TV and that's presenting something new. So I am definitely for Mr. Robot this year in the best drama series category.
Yeah. Well, I've watched all of these shows except The Americans all the way through, and you have never seen a show like Mr. Robot. In fact, I'm not sure that they're the good guys. Like, okay, they're bringing down industry and the banks and we hate them and blah, blah, blah. But really, why are they doing this? And what's the virtue or value of them? I don't know that I know the answer to that yet, Kelly.
Well, you know, isn't that one of the great things about television? In the last couple of years, the good guys and the bad guys, that line is really blurred. And, you know, we saw that with Breaking Bad, where we saw someone who seemed like such a normal, everyday guy become a drug czar and really blur the line between hero and anti-hero.
Yeah.
And I think fans like that. They like to sometimes root for the bad guy.
Well, you remember how Sopranos, it's pretty clear that they were doing bad things, but you loved Tony Soprano and the family. And I'm not going to say this is an equivalent, but I watched this TV show, Narcos, about Pablo Escobar, and he puts Tony Soprano and those guys to shame. But the love of a family, you know, that they have in the Escobar household is, you know, something universal. Even the worst people on earth really love their children. It's kind of an interesting dynamic.
You're absolutely right. And the second season of Narcos has really captured a lot of people's attention. This season, the show is better than ever. Last season, it got a lot of buzz, but this season, I think a lot of people have heard about it. So when they're making their viewing decisions, and now, you know, people are really fighting for that precious hour of your viewing time, people have found it and are realizing what a quality show it is. And it's, you're right. Sometimes bad guys are still kind of good guys underneath it all.
I think that show's as good as Breaking Bad, but that's me. It wasn't even nominated, so maybe next year. Let's talk about
exactly.
The comedy series, Blackish, Master of None, Modern Family, Silicon Valley, Transparent, Kimmy Schmidt, and Veep. What do you like?
Well, you know, Veep is the winner from last year, and the Television Academy loves to have repeat winners, but I really like Blackish. You know, a lot of these shows, none of these shows are really the traditional multi-camera comedies that we probably grew up with. All of these are single cameras. Even Transparent is a dark comedy. It's not even like, ha-ha. It's more like, oh, okay,
oh,
I'm kind of laughing. So, you know, I would say Blackish is one of the more traditional comedies, and I think it's really great. The cast is wonderful. The children on that show are delightful. And, you know, Anthony Anderson's reaction to being nominated for Best Actor in a Comedy is one of the highlights of this Emmy season. If you haven't seen it, it's all over the internet, and it's just charming how excited he was.
You know, so there you go. There's the big two categories, comedy series and drama series. But there is something called limited series. Is that a relatively new category?
You know, I don't know exactly when that category was created, but John, I think that's really the hottest category right now. The shows that are nominated in that category are some of the most buzzy shows of the entire year.
Okay.
You know, so I'm a member. You want to go
I'll just
it
list them real quick. Yeah,
stuff?
It's American Crime, Fargo, Roots, The Night Manager, and The People versus O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story.
Yes, these were all such wonderful series. I mean, any one of them could win in any other year. I'm a member of the Television Critics Association, and we voted People versus O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story, our program of the year. We think that show surpassed all comedies, all dramas, and it's just excellent. But, you know, if you look, Fargo season two was better than Fargo season one, and I can't even believe that's possible. you know, I loved The Night Manager. A six-hour series that was riveting. It was like a great spy drama, and the performances were just breathtaking.
Was The Night Of eligible for these categories? And I wonder which category that would go in. Would that be a limited series as well?
I think that will probably be up for nominations last year or next year. You know, mm-hmm. the voting window or the selection window is shorter, and I think that was a summer premiere.
I'm sure that
will get a look next year.
Yeah. The People versus O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story. You're talking about the FX series, not the one by the producers of 30 on 30 or 30 for 30 or whatever.
You're absolutely correct. Yeah, the FX series. And FX is really, you know, they have said that the limited series is a place that they want to really put a lot of their production dollar. You know, they've got Fargo. They've got American Crime Story. They've got American Horror Story. You know, that's a network that's saying we can give you amazing stuff in just a few weeks.
You know, I'm also looking at the number of nominations by network, if you will. In 2015, last year, HBO had 126 nominations. The next closest was FX at 38, Netflix at 34, stuff like that. Well, let's see. No, actually, the next closest would have been CBS at 41. But really, nobody was anywhere near the dominance that HBO had. HBO is number one again this year with 94, but FX has 56 and Netflix has 54. So it looks like the gap is narrowing, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, the thing that's funny is a lot of those HBO nominations come from just a few projects. You know, if you look, Game of Thrones has two and three actors in some of the acting categories. They also are dominating a lot of the special effects categories, costuming, makeup, you know, scoring, a lot of places where, you know, they can pick up several nominations. And so I think, you know, that's a place that HBO is picking up a lot of those nominations from.
So we talked about some of these categories, drama and comedy and the limited series. Were there any other little gems of shows out there or maybe performances by actors or actresses that you're kind of rooting for or maybe flying under the radar, Kelly?
Absolutely. Well, you know, looking at some of the acting categories, I think that the outstanding lead actress in a drama series category is just stacked. You know, you've got Keri Russell from The Americans, Taraji P. Henson from Empire, Claire Danes on Homeland, Robin Wright from House of Cards, Viola Davis from How to Get Away with Murder, and Tatiana Maslany from Orphan Black. All brilliant performers.
Yeah. Sharing who you think is going to win?
Absolutely. Well, there's who I think should win or who I'd like to see win and who I think will probably win. Who I would love to see win is Robin Wright. On House of Cards this season, she really carried the season. And not only did she carry the season in front of the camera, but she also directed four of the best episodes this season. So I would love to thank her for the good work she did on both sides of the camera. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the winner is probably going to be Taraji P. Henson for her outstanding work on Empire. Cookie Lyon is the reason to watch that show. She really is.
Yeah, that's once. You know, this is funny because I think I need to resist beating people up who don't watch a show I'm watching. Like I say, wait a minute, you haven't watched The Night Of, or wait, you're not watching Narcos, or you're not watching Game of Thrones. What's the matter with you? But you just can't watch all the shows. So there may be some great product out there that people don't see just because you only have so much time.
Absolutely. It's a problem that even me, you know, my job is to watch television and have an opinion about it. I find myself missing out on stuff. And then from other people in the industry saying, oh, I'm going to take a look at that. You know, there's not enough hours in the day to watch all the great TV that is available to us. And it's, you know, it's we have an embarrassment of riches in the television industry right now.
Yeah, it seems to be the case. In fact, here's just another category that I think is kind of stacked, and that's lead actor in a drama. Kyle Chandler from Bloodline, Rami Malek, Malek for Mr. Robot, Better Call Saul, Bob Odenkirk, Matthew Reese from The Americans, Liev Schreiber, Ray Donovan, Kevin Spacey, House of Cards. So who's going to win there?
Well, I think a lot of people think that Matthew Reese is due. The Americans is a show that the critics have loved for a long time. And finally, other people are noticing it as well. But I do think that Rami Malek for Mr. Robot, I would love to see him win. I mean, he's playing a paranoid, kind of druggy hacker, and he carries the show. He carries the freshest, hottest new show.
You know who doesn't get credit, I don't think? Maybe they do, but doesn't get the credit he deserves is Liev Schreiber. I just think that Ray Donovan character is really well written. I think that's a really good show. He never overreaches. You know, he stays within the confines of that character's emotional range, which is pretty limited. And yet we find ourselves laughing at some of the scenes, even though that show is hard to watch. But don't you think that's a good program?
It is a great program. And, you know, that's one of the things that's frustrating for us is we fall in love with shows and we write about them and we tell people about them. And sometimes, you know, the shows just don't get the love that they deserve. But I am glad that Liev is getting, you know, he has a nomination. Hopefully more people in seeing a little clip of him during the Emmys might say, hey, I'm going to check that show out on Showtime.
Yeah, Showtime. Let's pause here for just a second. We're visiting with Kelly Fries. She's a writer for Channel Guide and TV Weekly. I'll tell you in a minute how you can check out the things that she's writing and talking about. If you've got a question, comment, observation, we'd love to hear it. 312-981-7200. What show, actor, or actress are you rooting for tomorrow night? You can call 312-981-7200. This is WGN. But there's a million categories and ways to talk about TV shows. We were talking about themes earlier. And then just opens in general, the theme and the visuals and the anticipation. And boy, they take a lot of liberty with this one, too, because Game of Thrones intro is not short. We're talking to Kelly Fries, who's a writer for Channel Guide and TV Weekly. Have you done that article yet or column, Kelly, where you just write about who has the best intros for TV shows?
You know, and we have talked about that a lot because I am always singing TV theme songs and I drive everyone crazy because of it. But no, we haven't really talked about it. I have talked to a lot of the composers of different TV shows, and it's a lot of work to put together a TV show theme song.
Well, we were listening to some of them earlier and thought some of them were really good. And you do sense the craft in them. The one that kind of got us going was from AV Club. And they said that Mission Impossible is maybe, you know, one of the most iconic TV themes of all time. And that's fair enough. But boy, there's a bunch of other ones that are pretty good, too. One other category, variety talk series, comedians in cars getting coffee, Jimmy Kimmel Live, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, The Late Late Show with James Corden, Real Time with Bill Maher, and The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon. Is there a hands-down favorite? Does everybody think one of them is going to win?
Well, I have a hands-down favorite for sure. But, you know, all these shows, obviously, to get nominated, they all have their fans. But I am a big fan of The Late Late Show with James Corden. I think it's, you know, doing the buzziest stuff in late night. I think that his carpool karaoke is some of the best moments in television. I think the one he did with Adele last year was brilliant. Every time he has it on, I stop, I watch. And, you know, so I think he's the best. I mean, you do have to kind of hope a little bit that Jimmy Kimmel, it'd be sweet if he won just because he's hosting. And, you know, he's a double nominee, though, so maybe he'll pick up one somewhere.
Yeah, that James Corden bit, every now and then somebody does something on TV and you think, wow, I thought we'd seen everything. This is such a clever idea. It's so well executed. I thought the Adele version was really outstanding. And I'll bet there's a lot of stars, agents now calling the producers of Corden's show going, okay, we want X in the front seat. And because what a plum for you right now. That's the place to be, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and what helps is James Corden has an amazing voice. So he can, you know, match with Adele or Mariah Carey or Britney Spears. Or when he had the Broadway actors on before the Tonys, you know, he delivers. So it's not just someone getting up there and sounding like a frog. He's got a beautiful voice himself.
And he does a great job of, I think, putting those people at ease. Some of them are naturals in that seat, but I didn't feel that for Adele, and yet very quickly she fell into it. When Britney Spears was in the front seat, I went, oh, boy, I'm sure she's as nervous as we are for her. And it worked out fine. It worked out fine.
Yeah.
That's a great talent James Corden has for sure. Okay, well, we'll see. Tomorrow night, Kelly Fries, you can read her stuff at Channel Guide, and TV Weekly is channelguide.com. The best way to find you, Channel Guide Mag, is that where I go?
Channelguidemag.com, absolutely.
Channel
we've got,
Guide.
You know, we've always got lots of great interviews with a lot of celebrities, and we're always talking about TV. So we'd love to have people stop on by and read what we're doing.
Kelly, I'm going to call you again. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thank you so much, John. Have a great day.
You too. We'll pause here, update you on the news. The boys from The Beat come by a little early in the next half hour. We'll talk a little bit about sports, and our Vibe Score talks a little bit about everything on WGN. Thank you, Bob Kessler. This is John Williams, and this is our Vibe Score segment. We do this on Saturdays right about now, where we look at a whole host of things through the app called Vibe Score. It's one word. You can get that for free, V-I-B-E-S-C-O-R-E, Vibe Score. And we'll feed you various topics you're interested in. You score them, and then we talk about it here on WGN. So what were we listening to there, Griff? That's in the music category, right? Or was
that's
that
actually going to be in the Chicago category. That was the Hold Steady.
Ah, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Band from Minneapolis that is playing at Riot Fest tonight.
Right, so
in the Chicago category, I'm in the process of posting this one right now, in fact. Riot Fest is back again this weekend, this time in Douglas Park. Headliners include Morrissey, Nas, Flaming Lips, who played last night, Ween, Death Cab for Cutie, and a bunch more. A lot of great bands and artists. And we're just asking people, if you're there, tell us what you think.
Vibe, Riot Fest, not the Hold Steady, right?
Right, yeah, yeah, but the Hold Steady are playing there tonight. There was a song called Hot Soft Light off of the album that they're going to play tonight all the way through, which is called Boys and Girls in America.
Is that kind of a thing this year where everybody's doing whole albums?
It does come around, you know, every year. I think it's another one of those things because it's usually, and this is the case for the Hold Steady, on the 10-year. This is the 10-year anniversary of that album, which came in 2006, I believe. I'm pretty sure. So I guess that's the reason for doing it. And it's an album that people love a lot. So
would want to hear the whole way through.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So Vibe away. If you've got the app, you can go to the Chicago group and then tell us what you make of Riot Fest. What else are we looking at?
In the music category, I was going to bump with this, but then I went with the Hold Steady instead. But Lady Gaga is back with the first single from her upcoming album called Joanne.
I haven't heard it yet, but you can listen to it through the app. There's a link to it. You can watch the video. Have you listened to the song? What do you think?
I'm not crazy about it. I don't know if Bob's heard it, but he's usually not.
I haven't, but I did like the Hold Steady tune.
I
love that
Bob
song.
I know you haven't heard it, but I'll go ahead and give your response. No, I didn't really like it. I'll give it about a 12. How's Bob?
It's usually
he
I didn't really like it
for me so far. I guess
I didn't really like it, but it gets an 80. That's usually
you know you're absolutely right. Bob's such a good guy. He goes, that's a piece of crap. I'm going to give it an 82.
I really liked a lot of Lady Gaga songs, and she's got so many hits. So there's a lot of ways to feel about a bunch of them. You know, I love some of them, and some of them don't do much for me. And this falls somewhere in the middle. I gave it like a 60.
Fair enough.
It's getting a 68 right now, I think. In the movies category, we had Clint Eastwood's Sully is in theaters right now. It's doing well with critics and audiences. Tom Hanks stars as Sully Sullenberger, who captained the famous Miracle on the Hudson. Have you seen it? What's your score for this movie?
Right, right, right. Did you see this one yet?
Not yet.
Yeah, we need more scores on that one. You know, the movie I saw last was Hell or High Water, and I also saw The Lobster. Well, and
I actually was thinking for one final time we'd bring it up, The Lobster, because we talked about it like 100 times. All of them.
It was the best movie of the year.
All of them when you had not seen it. And now you have. So I think we have to at least. What did you think?
It's not the best movie of the year.
Go figure.
It was the trailer was so enchanting. I thought it was going to be like, what's the movie, Griffin? The Budapest Hotel or
Grand
something
Budapest
like
Hotel,
that.
Grand Budapest Hotel,
Grand Budapest Hotel. I thought it was going to be
movie.
Like that. I love the characters.
I don't know why you thought it would be like
because
that.
Because of the trailer. It had that sort of quirky feel. It had that kind of vibe. I thought, oh, this will be fun and imaginative. And it was imaginative, but
less fun.
Pretty bizarre.
Oh yeah.
So,
I told you on this show that it's really depressing. But you refused to hear me on that. You just still thought it was going to be really fun.
I'm not going to spoil the movie for anybody, but to that point, the last scene, the man is trying to decide whether or not he's going to stick a knife in his eye. That's what that movie is.
How is that not a spoiler?
Is compound lobster eye or his human eye?
Well, I don't tell you if he sticks it in his eye or not, Griff. Let's
holy
leave it
cow!
There.
Okay, yeah. Now I feel guilty for bringing this up.
The movie, guess what? No one's going to see it. It's called The Lobster, and it's not the best movie of the year.
I did really like it. It's too long was my main thing with it. If it had been 20 minutes shorter, I think it might have been one of my favorites of the year. So,
well, you know that part where they say, if you don't find love, then you are turned into the animal of your choice?
Yeah,
and
right.
He says, I want to be a lobster. That's the part in the trailer. And I thought, oh, God, that's awesome. That's the only part of the movie I really liked. The other 158 minutes didn't really do so much for
me. Did they explain why he didn't say dolphin? That would be so much better.
Really, the more you think about it, he goes, well, a lobster lives a long time. But you're still a lobster. You're just crawling around on the bottom of the ocean. The lobsters ain't having any fun.
So, holy cow. Well, I think it's now appropriate to put a moratorium on all lobster talk.
No, I think we should talk about the lobster every week because it's a subject I'm very good at and I'm very passionate about.
I see what the Mincing Rascals think. in the TV category, I think you probably feel the opposite about this. Dancing with the Stars is back.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done a lot of TV
talk,
but we did not talk about Dancing with the Stars. From Marsha Brady to Rick Perry, Ryan Lochte.
Ryan Lochte.
What's your vibe for season 23?
Yeah, well, I can sure give you my vibe on that. I give it a 92. I love the show. I love that Cheryl is back. I love some of the dancers that are on the regulars. I was mad at the series because they brought Lochte on board. But now he's going to find that this show is redemptive because he's playing the victim card this week.
Yeah, but that's why you should hate it even more, right? Sounds so despicable.
It really was, but it is its own kind of thing. Besides, Rick Perry is dancing, and he's delightful. It's, I don't think I could give it much lower than an 80-something. I'm giving it a 92, Griff.
Bob, I know you're up to date.
I haven't seen it. I like that Marsha Brady's in it, so I'll give it an 80-something.
Fair enough.
Is Tom Bergeron still the host?
Yes, he is.
I like him.
He's very good. He is really a good host.
Good TV host, yeah.
Yeah. All right, keep going, Griff.
It's getting an 87, so the people are with you there. In Chicago, the Bears opened up the 2016 campaign with a loss.
Yeah.
They're playing tomorrow night, I've heard. And what's your vibe for this season? How are you feeling about it?
I think I'm with everybody else. I'm at a 20. It looks like our worst fears are being realized. One game in. What's the vibe overall for this?
It is a 20.
Yeah.
You're in lockstep with everybody else. Yeah, I mean, look, it still seems early, but for some reason there's a bad vibe in the air. In the viral category. Now, did you watch this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
80s child star. 2000s reality star, current day musician, we now know, debuted a new song on the Today Show last week. Corey Feldman, I'm talking about, by the way. The performance has a lot of people talking, laughing, wincing, etc. It's something to see. So we put it on the app. Ask what you think.
I'm a little embarrassed for him, but I don't know if he was trying to be so ridiculous that you'd wince? Or did he really think that was high art, whatever
it's,
the hell
it's
that
It's hard
was?
To tell where he's coming down on it, if he's how aware of what's...
That's the word.
What the deal
was
is.
He aware?
The funny thing is that I was sort of expecting a train wreck of a performance, but it wasn't. It all went off, you know, without a hitch, and, like, he performed whatever he was doing well. So
imagine
I was happy for him with that.
Imagine the women from that Robert Palmer music video with the women in the background with the guitars, only now they're
right.
angels in white. And
right, yeah.
Corey Feldman comes out with a hoodie and does a bizarre dance and then breaks out into a very average song. I didn't get it. I don't know what that was.
Bob, did you see it?
I did see it.
Yeah.
It was hard to watch. I found it painful.
Yeah.
So because it caused pain... I'll give it a 20. But it just was such...
All right.
It was such glaring mediocrity. It's really all it was. It wasn't, like you say, Griff, not a train wreck, but it wasn't like...
Yeah, but
oh,
no,
but
was,
wasn't it an example of somebody who's famous, and oh, now they get to be in a band. Nobody else gets that gig, but he does because he's Corey Feldman.
But mediocrity is rarely delivered with such gusto. Like, you need someone to tell him how mediocre the song was, because I respect how hard he went with it. I was, like, sort of impressed.
There is a certain courage that goes into
yeah.
saying, okay, here's what I'm going to do, and I'm not going to... I'm going to give it 100%. He really does deliver the
I was more wondering what the Today Show was doing with him on. I was like, really?
I know.
Is that what?
They're the ones to blame.
Well, it was sufficiently obtuse that it should be more on late night TV
yeah.
than morning
yeah,
morning
like,
news shows.
It's like 80s Letterman kind of thing. I was just thinking.
Exactly.
It looks
Where's
maybe,
Larry Bud Melman when you need him?
It looks worse for them, maybe, than it actually does for... I don't know.
That's a good point.
It's getting a 68, so
yeah.
it's kind of just one of those things people don't know what to make of. In Food and Drink, we posted... bartender Laura Keldon has paid tribute to Prince with a cocktail she calls Purple Rain. It's a gin sour with blackcurrant liqueur. And we put this in the AV Club also supplied that recipe. So we put that link and the recipe up on VibeScore, asking people to try it for themselves.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You're a cocktail guy.
I totally am, and I'm a gin guy too, but I haven't tried this yet, so I'll... assemble it this week and then go ahead and sample it and vibe it. That's kind of fun. I like that VibeScore's
yeah.
giving us some recipes to try and then reporting back to the whole class.
Now, we are also kind of in our food and drink sweet spot with a post this week, which was some horrifying Burger King concoction that also...
The chicken nacho cheese fries.
Or like Cheeto chicken something.
Cheeto chicken fries, yeah. They're chicken fingers that come in a pack like French fries sprinkled with Cheetos dust. Which sounds so industrial. It just sounds so... I don't think that's a food product I just described.
No, that's not. You grow those on the farm. That's out of the dirt.
When a farmer comes in and says, our crops is saved, and he's got nacho-sprinkled chicken fries, then I'm in. But right now, it seems to me a little too high-tech. It's not a food stuff you're talking about. So people are vibing on that, right, Griff?
Yeah, I don't know what that one's getting, actually. I'm kind of trying to
look.
Phase those out, but you know what? They refuse to leave.
No, I love those. I love that category, man.
All right,
keep
they're here to stay.
There.
All right, well, we'll check in with the cocktail with you next week. And then, yeah, did you want to just iPhone 7?
iPhone 7 is another one that we put up there.
Yeah.
Here's what I want to say.
Yeah.
I'm mad at Apple because they made another product that isn't compatible with all the other stuff they forced us to buy all these
sure,
years.
Yeah.
And now wire a no headphone jack on an iPhone. So I'm not getting it. I'm down on that group.
It is getting a 49.
Fine. They deserve it. They'll go bankrupt. That's our VibeScore segment. You can subscribe to the... app VibeScore. It's free. You can download it. And we'll check in with more vibing topics next week. The boys from The Beat say hi right around the corner on WGN. Mark Carman and Andy Mazur are getting ready to talk sports. Hi, guys. How's it going?
World Series.
Or bust.
It's all...
Did you guys, was there any conversation about the celebration the Cubs put on after they at least clinched...
It's funny that you mentioned that, John, because we were just riding down in the elevator, and Andy had a very interesting take on that.
John, I thought that the celebration was even businesslike. I really did. I mean, they were saying all the correct things. about how this celebration really means nothing in comparison to, you know, two or three more down the road, which obviously would mean a whole lot more.
Yeah.
You know, they seem to be kind of taking it in stride. It was almost a foregone conclusion from the beginning of the year.
I think I think John Williams has a different take on this, or something's going on in your mind that you're not satisfied. Am I wrong?
I remember one year when they won the, not the division, yeah, I guess the division, right? That's what we just won here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And people were saying, gee, you know, you're not done yet, guys, so the celebration seems a little premature. And I just wondered if that was going to percolate back up again. And you're right, because I think we expect so much more from this team. I don't know how they're supposed to do it. I'm not exactly sure what protocol should be.
So what I'm hearing is you're worried that yesterday's celebration is the only celebration you're going to see, and somehow they celebrate.
I've been worried since the All-Star break, Carm. You remember when they sort of tailed off at the end of the first half,
yeah.
And I've been nervous ever since. I keep thinking, oh, God, I hope this is real. So, I mean, I've watched every game. Good Lord, they've been fun, and they really haven't wavered. They're going to win over 100 games.
You realized – go ahead, Andy.
I saw a stat. Just to kind of give you an idea of how consistent this team has been.
Oh. Yeah.
42-18 in the first 60. 42-18 in the last 60.
Wow. Wow. It's been impressive. It's been so much – I mean, really, do you guys remember having this much fun watching a team – when's the last time? Would you go back to one of the Bulls runs?
I'd even go, you know, the Hawks, the first one in 2010, you know, probably the last time.
When you bring up the Bulls, this almost feels Bulls-like when you start the season 25-6.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, they're going to the playoffs. Let's just wait until, you know, the New York Knicks or whoever is here. Basically, wait until the Giants show up here or the Dodgers or the Nationals or the Cardinals. Let's go because we're going to the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's obvious.
I got the MLB package, so sometimes I get the Cardinals feed of the Cubs game when mm-hmm. the Cubs and Cards are playing, which is very interesting to hear because we've been doing that all season long. And all of the announcers all have nothing but good things to say about Madden and the team, top to bottom. But the Cardinals announcers still think they're going to beat us in the playoffs.
Yeah, they got to get there first.
You know,
well, there's that.
Yeah.
it's interesting, John. I don't know if you're aware of this, and I'd like to hear Andy's thoughts because he's buddies with all the play-by-play guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of them have vendettas they just would never talk about. John Rooney, who does the call for the Cardinals.
Yeah, on radio.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He calls the final out in San Francisco the other day. Doesn't say a word about how the Cubs have clinched.
Mm-hmm.
Had every opportunity to do it.
Really?
Didn't say a word.
That's funny because they have the best fans in baseball. You'd think that they would want to know about that.
Yeah, that's not the Cardinal way.
Yeah, boy, oh boy. Well, so are you guys all baseball all the time? What else are you doing this afternoon?
No, that's it.
We got everything. No, we got it all.
There's a football game this weekend. I don't know if you heard about that, but the Bears are going to play, I understand.
Yeah.
Adam Hoge will be on with us at 4:30. We're going to talk. We have our Wildcat Insider at 5. Dr. Jim Phillips will be with us. Also, there's a young man who's making a video film 30 for 30 on Bears fans who's going to be in studio with us at 6, but a lot of baseball to start.
Okay, boys, we'll be listening. Hey, Andy, good to hear you too,
you
guys.
You too, John.
Andy Mazur, Mark Carmen, the boys from The Beat, ready to entertain and inform you after the news. We'll get you to the news next here on WGN.